Welcome to the Council of Trent podcast, a production of Catholic Answers.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to Free for All Friday here on the Council of Trent podcast. I'm your host, Catholic Answers apologist and speaker, Trent Horn. On Free for All Friday, we talk about whatever I want to talk about. Monday through Thursday, we talk apologetics, theology, how to explain and defend the Catholic faith. But on Friday, anything kind of goes. And today, I want to talk about environmental ghost towns. So a ghost town is a community or a city that was once thriving but has been abandoned because the city is now inhospitable. Usually it's an economic reason. I remember when I was a kid, we went on a field trip to a ghost town in Arizona that had sprung up from the gold rush. And then once all the gold was gone, the town had been abandoned. Today, I want to talk about ghost towns in the United States, because there are ghost towns in other places where there are different reasons, including environmental disasters that have brought about the ghost towns. Probably one of the most famous in the world is going to be Pripyat, Ukraine, which would be the town where people lived who worked at the Chernobyl nuclear power station in the Soviet Union. So when the Chernobyl nuclear plant experienced its meltdown and radioactive materials were dispersed over the area, Pripyat, Ukraine, was evacuated. And there are still some trace amounts of radiation there, but it's turned into a kind of ghost town that you can now save. The radiation levels have dropped enough, it's safe to visit the town again. So I might talk about those. Actually, a fair number of interesting ghost towns in the former Soviet Union in general. That'll be another free-for-all Friday. Today, I'd rather talk about ones that are right here in the good old U.S. of A, because we are not immune to environmental disasters here as well. That's what I want to talk about. The first one I want to talk about is the Centralia disaster. So Centralia is a borough and near ghost town in Columbia County, Pennsylvania. Its population has declined from about 1,000 people in 1980 to just 5 residents in 2017. I'm not even sure if those 5 people are still there today. So what happened? Why were there 1,000 people in 1980 and now there's hardly anybody who lives there? You can blame that on the 1962 Centralia mine fire. Here's an article that details it. Here's an article detailing about the fire. It seems to have started with the Centralia landfill, an abandoned mine pit that had been converted into a garbage dump in 1962. Trash was a thorny issue in Centralia, which was full of unregulated dumps, and the city council wanted to solve a problem with unwanted odors and rats. So in May of 1962, the council proposed cleaning up the local landfill just in time for Memorial Day festivities. David DeCock, writing in his book, Fire Underground, this might seem like irrelevant small town history, except for one thing. Centralia Council's method for cleaning up a dump was to set it on fire. Now, you can incinerate garbage. That is a way of dealing with it at a landfill when done properly. That's a way you can get rid of it. But here, they just decided to set the dump on fire and hope for the best. And instead, they got the worst. Soon, a fire was raging in a coal seam beneath Centralia. It spread to mine tunnels beneath the town streets. The local mines were closed due to unsafe carbon monoxide levels. Multiple attempts were made to excavate and put out the fire, but all of them failed. So you have this coal seam, rich deposit of coal underneath Centralia, Pennsylvania. Coal, of course, is very combustible. We use it for combustion and power plants and steam locomotives. You'd use coal and you can burn coal in all sorts of ways and it will keep burning. And it produces toxic fumes, carbon monoxide, other things when it burns. And it has been projected that the fire under Centralia, there is so much coal there, it can continue burning for another 250 years. So it started burning in 1962 and it has not stopped since. In some places, the fire reached 900 degrees Fahrenheit. Smoke poured from sinkholes and gas-filled basements. Residents reported health problems, and homes began to tilt. Even the dead cannot rest in peace, wrote Greg Walter for People magazine in 1981. Graves in the town's 2 cemeteries are believed to have dropped into the abyss of fire that rages below them. Could you imagine if you went to a Centralia cemetery and you're, let us pray for the soul of Uncle Fred? Oh, I'm sure he's up in heaven right now. And then the ground opened and you saw his grave dropping into a pit of fire. Like, maybe it's a sign. I don't know. But also says a 12-year-old boy fell into a sinkhole created by the fire, barely escaping death. Rather than put out the fire, Congress decided to buy out the residents and pay them to move. In 1992, Pennsylvania moved to kick the holdouts for good. So everybody left except for the stalwarts, the people who aren't going to abandon my town. It's like that scene in Cars. Remember that scene where they're talking about Radiator Springs and they build the interstate, and so Radiator Springs becomes a ghost town as a result. And they've got James Taylor singing, "It's our town now." I was thinking they should take that song and play it for Centralia. Like, it's still a good town. No, it's not. It's so bad. The zip code has been eliminated. Centralia doesn't even have a zip code anymore. You got no postage. You're technically not even really allowed to be there. The roads aren't on maps. If you do get on the roads, they're buckled from all the fires and the earth shifting underneath them. It says that 7 residents remained via a court order, but they are forbidden from passing down their property or selling it. So the people who are left in Centralia, anybody there who owns property, if they die, their property goes to the government. So the government's just waiting out the last people to die off. I don't know. There might be somebody there. I'm not sure. But in 2017, there were the Centralia 5 that were still remaining there. So that is the history of the Centralia ghost town. Here is the next one. The Salton Sea. The Salton Sea is a lake in Southern California. Whenever I fly to San Diego for Catholic Answers business, I usually fly over the Salton Sea, and you can check it out. It looks very pretty there in the middle of the desert. You got this big blue lake. But if you get up close to it, it is not pretty. It is a gross, disgusting lake. There's just dead fish, dead animals, putrid smell, abandoned buildings, and then a few eccentric people living in buses and making sculptures out of trash. And it's a really weird and wonky place, but it wasn't always like that. It used to be actually kind of a resort town. So what happened? Well, we got to go back to the beginning. In the late 19th century, the California Development Company tried to turn the Imperial Valley, which is the desert east of San Diego and LA, to turn it into an agricultural oasis. So they built a series of canals. One of the canals breached the Colorado River during a very high rain season. The river then flowed for 2 years, filling up the Salton Basin in Southern California. It destroyed the Southern Pacific Railroad siding, the town of Salton, but it left behind a lake. It was stopped 2 years later, but it left behind a lake that was called the Salton Sea. It became a site for fishermen, but because it's not a natural lake with fresh water sources going into it, it became more and more salty. The salinity level rose year after year. And I've been to the Dead Sea in Israel, lowest point in the world, and it's amazing how these salt lakes, how salty they can get. I put one drop of that on my tongue, felt like my tongue was on fire. I could not make water that salty if I just went home and mixed water and table salt. It is salty. I remember some girls in our group had shaved their legs and they went into the Dead Sea and they were screaming because, you know, your legs are on fire. Anything, any kind of abrasion on your body, you go into the Dead Sea, you're going to regret it. But the Salton Sea is also as salty, is similar, highly salinic, high saltwater content lake. So they put in saltwater fish, salmon, halibut, and I think tilapia, and some of them started to thrive. And so it became a recreation area. People went there for jet skis and relaxing by the lake and fishing. It's like having the ocean in your backyard in that area. It was called Palm Springs by the Sea. It enjoyed immense popularity. Celebrities like Dean Martin, Jerry Lewis, Lighty, Jerry Lewis, Frank Sinatra, and the Beach Boys. The lake became a speedboat playground. Article goes on to say, however, the Salton Sea's bright lights would quickly fade in the 1970s. The seawater level began rising because of heavy rain, so it destroyed actually the jetty at the club, the beach club people would go to. And so they're like, oh, great, we're having too much water. But then the problem was too little water. The lake kept draining, and the continuing agricultural runoff into the lake from all the farmland polluted it. So the salt level increased, the salt from the soil went into the lake, toxins, fertilizer runoff. This created algae, which fed on the toxin. The algae choked out the fish, and that killed off the birds. And then before you know it, not even Captain Planet could save the Salton Sea. Within just a few years in the 1980s, the resorts closed, the marina was abandoned. Everyone moved, leaving abandoned businesses, homes, and scattered junk, which is now left to the eccentric people who live out at the Salton Sea, which a story is in its own right I'd have to share with you at another time. Finally, I talk about two more examples of environmental. These are kind of ghost towns. One of them, there's still people there. Ghost town in a loose sense, but still an environmental disaster that people had to flee from. This is an article from the EPA talking about Love Canal, of course. So what was Love Canal? Love Canal was an area of land on the eastern edge of Niagara Falls, New York, named after William T. Love. He wanted to build a canal there between the upper and lower Niagara rivers to provide power and create this kind of a dream community. That didn't go through. Instead, it says here in the 1920s, instead, the seeds of a nightmare were planted. The canal was turned into a municipal and industrial chemical dump site. So it was used as a dump for the next 30 years. In 1953, the Hooker Chemical Company covered the canal with earth and sold it to the city for $1. Like, great, you can have all this land for a dollar. And anytime someone wants to sell you something for a dollar, be it a house in Detroit or Love Canal, it's more trouble than it is worth. In the late 1950s, 100 homes and a school were built at the site of Love Canal. But then the problems began to emerge because of all of the dumping, chemical dumping that had taken place there. The author of this article, this is from the EPA Journal in 1979, Eckhart Beck. This is what he said. This was in 1979. I visited the canal area at that time. Corroding waste disposal drums could be seen breaking up through the grounds of backyards. So these toxic barrels are coming up through the earth in kids' backyards. Trees and gardens turned black and were dying. One swimming pool popped up from its foundation, afloat in a small sea of chemicals. Puddles of noxious substances pointed out to me by the residents. Some of these puddles were in their yards and their basements or the school grounds. The air had a faint, choking smell. Children returned from play with burns on their hands and faces. And then there were the birth defects. The New York State Health Department continues in 1979. An investigation into a disturbingly high rate of miscarriages, along with 5 birth defect cases detected thus far in the area. And one father told him, when you go back to your people at EPA, don't use the phrase, only 5 cases. This is a tiny community. 5 birth defect cases here is terrifying. So later the site was eventually cleaned up in a Superfund operation and the residents were moved. But Love Canal has now become synonymous with the hazards of unregulated waste disposal, of acquisition of properties. Always something you have to make sure that you take care of. This is a little bit similar to also another disaster involving unintentional pollution of a wide area, and that would be the Times Beach disaster. This is the last one I want to cover with you all. So Times Beach was an area in Missouri. It was a small Midwest town there that eventually became the site of another environmental disaster. You've probably heard of Love Canal, but you might not have heard of Times Beach. So here is a story. Here's what happened at Times Beach. Back in the 1960s in Verona, Missouri, there was a facility there creating chemicals for use in the Vietnam War, stuff like Agent Orange that was used to kill off jungle foliage in Vietnam to help the troops advance in the jungle. So in Verona, there was a company, Hoffman Taff, that produced 2,4-5 trichlorophenoxyacetic acid. I'm sure I pronounced that correctly, or Agent Orange. In the creation of Agent Orange, there's a hazardous byproduct, 2,3,7,8 tetrachlorodibenzopdioxin, aka dioxin. Dioxin is a highly toxic substance that was stored at the facility in tanks. Highly toxic, can cause cancer, reproductive developmental problems, damage the immune system. And so you got to get rid of it. So Hoffman Taff hired Russell Bliss, a waste oil hauler, to get rid of the dioxin. And so what he did was he mixed the dioxin with waste oil to get rid of it. And instead of getting rid of the waste oil properly, he used this waste oil for dust suppression on the dirt roads and the horse tracks in Times Beach. So this dioxin was mixed in with oil and was used to cover up the dirt roads and the racetrack to prevent the dust from getting up in the air to help to keep it down. Now, of course, it was covered with dioxin. At one site, Shenandoah Stables, in 1971, so after he did this, over 40 horses died from the toxic mixture that Bliss had sprayed on the dust surfaces where the horses were trained and rode. Birds, cats, and dogs were also found dead near the arena, and a six-year-old girl became very, very ill, causing the CDC to investigate. In 1974, the CDC connected the illnesses in the town of Times Beach to the dioxin that was in the dust that had gone back to Bliss, taken from Hoffman Taff, and they realized it was all throughout the town. And so then a super fund was created, a Comprehensive Environmental Response Compensation and Liability Act, aka Superfund, to create a fund to address the dangers caused by the toxic waste dumps. This was in the 1980, around the same time that the government was trying to deal with Love Canal as well, to remove residents and to try to remove the dioxin, to sample it and remove where it might be present. It gets even worse. In 1982, the Merrimack River overflowed its banks, spread, you know, it flooded the town. And so then the dioxin that might have been just in the dirt roads is now everywhere. So in 83, the Environmental Protection Agency bought out the town. Later, a temporary incinerator was brought in 1996 to treat 265,000 tons of dioxin-contaminated materials. The cleanup was finished in 1997. Then a state park was opened there. And in 2012, the EPA conducted soil samples at Times Beach, finding that there were no more hazardous levels of dioxin. So once a nice little town is now a thriving state park. So there's the last example we have there. Hope that was interesting for you all to enjoy to start off our weekend. Hope it wasn't too much of a downer. I'm sure your weekend festivities won't be in a toxic waste site. If they are, send them to Free For All Friday. Send them to me. I'll talk about them here on the podcast as a part two follow-up. But hey, I hope you enjoyed learning something new. Thank you guys so much, and I hope you have a very blessed one.
If you like today's episode, become a premium subscriber at our Patreon page and get access to member-only content. For more information, visit TrentHornPodcast.com.